Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another Home Team Series episode on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Coach Nellis has been doing some great work for us all offseason, and I'm excited about his guest today, Coach Garrett Campbell of Fullerton College. Not only does this guy do a great job with the X's and O's, he's really found a winning formula to help him off the field with his home team, and Coach Nellis speaks to him about that today. So let's kick it over to Coach Nellis.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today, we're going to be speaking with offensive coordinator at Fullerton College, Coach Garrett Campbell. Embarking on his third season with the Hornets, Coach Campbell is no stranger to Fullerton College, as his father, Dick Campbell, was on the Hornet coaching staff for 15 seasons during the Hal Sherbrick years. As a young boy, Garrett served as Fullerton's ball boy, and later grew to become a quarterback and wide receiver from the Hornets from 1995 to 1996. Born and raised in Southern California, he earned his bachelor's degree at nearby California State Fullerton in 1998. He went on to earn his master's degree at Northern State University in 2002. Campbell got a start in coaching at Fullerton College in 1998. He has since coached at Northern State, Willamette University, Menlo College, Carthage College, and Illinois College. Prior to joining the Hornet coaching staff, Campbell was the head coach at Illinois College football for 8 seasons. He posted an overall record of 51-30 and led the 2011 Blue Boys to their first ever appearance in the NCAA Division III playoffs. Campbell has coached 75 all-conference selections and 209 academic all-conference selections while guiding an offense that has consistently ranked among the best in Division III. In 2011 to 2013, Campbell's offense was ranked number 8 out of 241 teams. In 2014 and 15, they were ranked number 9 and 10. In 2014, Campbell was voted the Midwest Conference Southern Division Coach of the Year, leading the Blue Boys to the 2014 MWC Southern Division title. He also led them to 4 consecutive winning seasons, a first since 1934 for the program. Campbell and his wife Melissa reside in Tempsico Valley, with their children, Olivia, Hayden, and Carter.
Coach Campbell, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Really appreciate it and excited to be here.
Now let's jump right in and start talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Actually, I was the offense coordinator at Carthage College up in Kenosha, Wisconsin at the time, and we sat around as a staff. We had to do a fundraiser, and I had an idea of somewhere where I had been previously. And so Coach Rux, Tim Rux I was working for, he said, hey, go up to the administration office and talk to this young lady and she'll help you out. And she'll get it all set up, do all the graphics and all this, that, and the other. And went up there and he didn't tell me that she was as cute as she was. long story short, she helped me work on a fundraising project, quite honestly. We kind of had the chit chat, the small talk, and then kind of kept bumping into each other here and there. And you know, I still remember it was a graduation evening. So after the ceremony and everything in May, and we were out with a bunch of the, you know, faculty, staff, coaches, whatnot. And we bumped into each other and we started talking again. And then next thing you know, the following Tuesday, we went on a lunch date and been together ever since. And it's been an absolute blessing. It's been an incredible marriage. We've been through a lot at a personal level, and she's just a special, special person. She's an incredible coach's wife, and she was a single mom at the time, I have to say. So when we got married, I had my first official walk-on. I call my oldest daughter my walk-on. She's a sweetheart, and she was 5 at the time. She's 20 now, and she's an incredible young lady in her own right. So that's how we met.
Was the fundraiser successful?
Hugely successful. And I give her credit for it.
Of course, as any good husband should.
Right.
Yeah, give credit. That's one you just got to give off to them. That's perfect.
Right.
What is her back? Or what does she do currently? And maybe what other passions or interests does she carve out time for?
She's a graphic designer. You know, her trade. That's her occupation. And she currently works at California Baptist University here in in Riverside, California, and she is the coordinator, and I'm probably going to screw up her title, but she is the coordinator of donor communications in their alumni and advancement office. So she works in the fundraising arm of the university. Some absolutely incredible people. So, but what does she do? Everything. She is an incredible, incredible person, but she likes to work out. She loves to go hiking. She's just kind of an active kind of person. She loves her Netflix. She loves her movies, but at the same time, she absolutely just really enjoys her workout time and just doing those kind of things. Not to mention, obviously, raising three kids and for the bulk of the time being the primary person at home, she's just been absolutely incredible. I can't begin to tell you how thankful I am to have her in my life and who she is. So,
what is a specific character trait that makes her so invaluable in your life?
She's an incredible listener, an absolutely incredible listener. She lets me talk about whatever it is I need to talk about. She lets me vent. And oftentimes, maybe I say the same thing over and over again. I might repeat myself and she just sits there and listens to it and lets me talk and kind of let it out, if you will. And she doesn't really try to offer solutions, but she definitely is an incredible, incredible listener. I also think she's an absolute go-getter, which is hugely important. That kind of goes along with the fact that she's very independent, which I think in this career, you know, being a football coach, having someone who is extremely supportive yet extremely independent is so critical. And I think those are the kind of the characteristics that she brings to the table that really help our marriage and kind of in addition to a lot of other qualities that she's got. But those are, as a football coach, those are the things I think that have helped in our marriage throughout the years.
Let's talk about the other members of your starting lineup, your kids. You know, brag on them a little bit. What are their names? What are their ages? What are their interests? And maybe what makes them so unique?
Yeah, so our oldest is Olivia. So, she's my stepdaughter. She was 5 when we met. And, you know, I can honestly say when I first met her, I fell in love with her as well. And now she's 20. And she goes to school out here at where I coach at. She goes to Fullerton right now. She'll be transferring here pretty soon. She wants to go to vet school. She graduated high school in Illinois with over a 4.0 GPA. She's here in college over 2 years. She's got a 3.9. She did get a B+ in class, which really made her very upset. But she is a tremendous worker. She wants to go to vet school. So not only does she have 2 jobs, she volunteers at a kind of a reptile zoo kind of place. She works at a vet clinic, and she works on campus in our admissions office as well. And then again, carries a 3.9 GPA. So she is an absolutely incredible person and just absolutely wonderful. Then we have a 12-year-old daughter, Hayden, she was born in Wisconsin, and she is an incredible dancer. That's kind of her passion. In fact, next year she'll be going to a fine arts high school where she'll be dancing about 4 hours a day and in addition to doing her studies for the other 4 hours or so. So she's really excited about that. It's a junior, senior high school just for kind of the fine arts. So she's really excited about that. And we're really excited for her because that's just her passion. She really loves to do it. We've tried to introduce her to other things. Trust me, there were footballs and baseballs and basketballs floating around her all the time as well. And she would try it. She would try it for her dad, but everything always went back to dance. And she's an absolutely incredible dancer, so I don't blame her. But that's where she's at. She's also an excellent student and just a wonderful, wonderful, big-hearted little girl and just wonderful person. And then we have our 5-year-old, Carter. And he'll be heading into kindergarten here pretty soon. And he is just a man, going from the girls to all of a sudden the boy. He's a bundle of energy. The Hot Wheels are all over the house. The dinosaurs are all over the house. And he, again, same thing, just a huge heart. And he loves trying new stuff, just doing everything. He's my little guy. He goes from everywhere. I got to go to Home Depot. I got to go to Walmart. I got to do whatever. He's the guy who wants to go with me all the time. So we have a pretty good routine every Friday. I take him to school and we go and get a donut and a chocolate milk before school. But he's my little guy. He's my little mini me, if you will, but he's just a fun, fun person to be around. And so there you go. There's my starting lineup.
I love it. Great group. Can win it all with those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think on the dance side, it's pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of guys out there, maybe coaches, that I have a daughter who dances, and I'm very proud of her for it. Even at a young age, I think there's sometimes we're like, oh, you know, what are they going to do with that? And then I had an epiphany like 3 years ago, like, okay, 95% of our high school kids don't go on and play any other sports after high school. And if correct. The dance thing might be the same way. It's like if they have the same, they put the same amount of effort and whatever, you know, most of our guys are never going to earn scholarships for their sport. You know, it's kind of those things where some people are like, oh, I don't get it, or I just can't believe it. And I'm like, man, they work as hard or harder as some athletes do. And, you know, the outcome could be potentially better for them. So I think the dance is a great world.
Right. I'm telling you what, I watched my older daughter, Olivia. She was a dancer as well until, and then once she was done, she loved dancing. She loved the camaraderie of the team, especially when she was in high school. She went to an incredible studio there in Jacksonville, Illinois, and at Miss Sarah's. Give her a shout out, even though she's probably not going to listen to the football podcast, but that's okay.
Well, that's why we put the questions first. We put her questions first, yeah. So you can brag on her, and then she can just cut it out later if she doesn't want to hear the rest.
Yeah. So I tell you what, it is really, it's incredible to watch. You know, I watch my 12-year-old daughter and spending, I'm going to say she's at her studio, I don't know, 9 or 10 hours a week. I mean, she's at the studio almost, and she's at the studio every single night. So, you know, you talk about the effort they're putting in, you know, she's putting in the same, if not more effort than a lot of our guys would put in at times. And, you know, the thing I'll say is, my daughter loves being on stage and she loves competing. And so when I watch her up there, it's no different than my quarterback's mom sitting in the stands watching her son out there playing. It's that same enjoyment that you get when you watch your son or daughter doing something that they love to do. And, you know, my daughter's just as crushed sometimes if she doesn't perform well, and she's just as elated as when she does perform well. But I'll tell you this, what was interesting, what was fascinating, and I didn't realize until I had a chance to really kind of reflect back on it, was the fact that I had two daughters who danced and really weren't really into athletics. You know, as a dad with the dance, as you know, you can drop off and you can pick up, but you can't really be as involved sometimes. Yeah. Being a dance dad is a little tougher than being a dance mom, you know, in terms of, and I understand that. But what that did was it helped me as a football coach, because if there were little boys playing baseball or basketball or something, I wanted to be at their practices or be involved in their teams. I don't know that I would have been able to. The dance thing kind of forced me to be separated a little bit as far as practices and that kind of thing. I could go to competitions and that kind of stuff, which was wonderful, but it was really fascinating. I'd still pick up, you know, late at night when my daughters would finish dance or what have you, but that was about the only role I could play. And so looking back on it, it was kind of fascinating, and I was probably somewhat fortunate. Now with my son, I'm able with this job to be involved a lot more in his athletics.
Yeah, they weren't knocking down your door to be the dance coach.
No, they definitely were. They definitely were. Right? If you see me dance, you'll know exactly why as well. So.
Well, yeah, and I got a daddy-daughter dance coming up for my daughter's program, so I'm fired up to be on stage and get a chance to show off all the skills that I don't have, but that'll be good.
Right. right. And I'm sure it'll end up on YouTube or something, so yeah.
Yeah, oh, we'll throw it up on the podcast, no doubt about it. You know, you were a coach at the time you met your wife. How did those maybe early negotiations go with you wanting to continue your career in coaching, and how that was going to work for your marriage?
So, you know, one of the things that we had a lot of talks about, that in terms of, you know, it was just going to be a situation that she knew when we started dating, you know, that I really wanted to be a head coach, and that I wasn't obviously going to stay there to be the head coach. I had to move on, and we'd have to move somewhere. We had some limiting factors. I mean, we really kept the lines of communication really open. So it started, you know, we discussed quite a bit about, you know, where we would move, how far we would move. My daughter Olivia, with her biological father, we had some limitations on how far we could move. Quite honestly, we couldn't move back to California where I was from. We couldn't move back to some other places because geographically it would just been too far. And we kept that in mind as we looked for, you know, I shouldn't say as we looked for the next opportunity. I'm kind of a believer that the best opportunities kind of find you. And when they're right, they're right. And if they're not, they're not. But, you know, we had an opportunity. There was an opportunity in Iowa. The opportunity down in Illinois at Illinois College was really a very good one for us because it kept us geographically somewhere that was near her our daughter's biological father. And so we were able to still do the vacations so she could see him and whatnot. So we had to take that really into account. So there were some factors that we talked about there. I don't think the fact of the moving part of it was ever a huge issue. It's just a matter of where we're going to move. We knew there would be a struggle at times. And we just kept communicating, kept talking about it. One of the things I think that really helped was I never really looked for another job. I never actively pursued other jobs. So I never really got my hopes up for other jobs. I really just made sure that if we did look at a position, it was a position that we both mutually kind of agreed on first in terms of location. And then we would investigate, you know, the other things. I will say this about my wife. And one of the things that she's been on a number of the interviews that, or she's at least came along and then did her own thing while I was interviewing. You know, my wife is pretty spot on. She knows how I am. And I love to win just as any coach does. But I remember us leaving one interview in particular after a day and a half interview, whatever it was, and her looking at me and she goes, "You're not coming here." And I said, "Why not?" She goes, "You can't win here. There's no wow factor." And I looked at her and I was like, "Wow." And she, you know what? She was spot on. She was 100% right. When I cooled off from the emotion of the interview and the excitement of the possibility and whatnot, she was 100% right. And it made it easy to turn the job down. Conversely, when we went down to Illinois College, we drove up to the college and we're like, holy cow, it was a beautiful campus, beautiful facilities. We just never had heard of the place back in 2008 when we were looking, or when we went down for the interview. And I still remember this when they called to offer the job. And I said, you know, give me a couple of days. Let me talk to my wife and family. We went out to dinner. And her very first question to me was, can we win there? Not can you win there, just can we win there? And I said, actually, I think we can. I said, it's going to take a little while, but I think we can. And, you know, so it was those kind of questions and going through the process and not getting wowed by it, but really trusting her opinion, because she felt the same way as well. She thought we could win there as well. You know, but she left the football side of it up to me, but she looked at the family side of it. She looked at the college, did it have the kind of the things that we were looking for as a family, to be the atmosphere we wanted to be a part of, that kind of thing. Coaches, sometimes we get wowed by the school, by the program, by all the other quote unquote stuff. And my wife has just been an unbelievable judge of, I'll say an unbelievable judge of character, but I also mean character within maybe the city, the town, whatever it may be, as well as the college and institution. But I think the key is this. The key is we've always been on the same page with what's going to impact our marriage. So when we had the opportunity to come out here to California at a time where, and these jobs out here at California Community Colleges, these tenured positions are just, they're great positions, great for the family. They're good for the retirement, a lot of other things. But when we had this opportunity, we knew it was going to be a struggle because my daughter was going to be a senior in high school, and I had promised her no matter what happened, she was going to be able to finish high school where she started. What that meant was I would have to come out here for a year and leave my family behind. And that was an absolutely tough thing to do. It was a struggle. And it wasn't a struggle that, you know, we ever questioned our marriage or anything like that, but it was a struggle because you get so used to having your best friend right next to you for so long. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're relying on early morning phone calls or late at night phone calls because you're both so busy during the day. And that makes it tough. But keeping those lines of communication open are just absolutely critical. And knowing that I really trust and value and believe in what she has to say. And she is an equal partner in this whole deal. And so I listen to her. And, you know, at home, I'll be honest with you, when I come home, it's a honey-do list, and I stay away, and I let her tell me what to do. She basically runs the house, and I'm okay with that. So I don't come in and try and run the show at home. Other than a big screen TV, that was the only thing I made sure we had to have, and so I could watch plenty of football. But you know, she really, she sets it up. She tells me what to do, and I appreciate that. And with this job, I've tried to make sure that I'm doing more around the house and making sure I'm, you know, we're communicating even more now with this particular job. So.
A big part of your team on the field or at home is the culture you build. And we have a great system for that with what we've put together with Brian Kite in Focus 3. Check out the R Factor and Lead Now system. Go to usafootball.com/Focus 3 to check out what we have available there. Brian has put together a great package for us and offered it at a 50% discount for football coaches. Again, check it out at usafootball.com/Focus 3. Let's get back to the conversation.
When you guys were discussing having kids, how did you decide or think through what would be the right time?
Well, I think we both knew there would never be a right time. It was just that we were, now again, we were a little older. So we were about 30. You know, I was in a full-time coaching position. She had her full-time job. So we were probably a little more established, we'll say, in our careers, maybe than some younger coaches who face a lot of that, those dilemmas at times. We both knew we wanted to have kids. We knew we got married in 2005, and we knew we wanted to have kids relatively quick. And we had some struggles. We went through, a miscarriage and some things, and that was another struggle in our marriage and to work through and to just make sure we were dealing with our own emotions and caring for each other at the same time. But our daughter came along in 2006, and I can still remember we had spring ball. We were right in the middle of spring ball, and we had practice on Monday and Wednesday, and she was born on Tuesday. It couldn't have worked out any better, So, but when we discussed it, it was more or less that we were ready to have a child. We were also ready to have another child shortly after Hayden was born with no luck. We tried, and we were trying to go through the whole process. We even saw a specialist, and specialist kind of explained everything, and we started going down that path. And we just kind of, in my mind, I figured we were kind of done. And unfortunately, biologically, we had some issues that it probably wasn't going to happen for us, just way we were at that point in time. Until one day where 7 years after my daughter was born, my wife wakes me up in the middle of the night and says, "We got to talk." And next thing you know, we're pregnant. I had kind of thought that ship had sailed. My wife, on the other hand, was just felt this, just this void in our heart, like something in our family was missing. And along came Carter, and we had our struggles. Again, we had some struggles with him in terms of being a preemie. And, I think the biggest thing is that we were constantly communicating about what our needs were and what our wants were and where each other was at. And I'll be honest with you, I look back at those times and I don't know that I was a very empathetic husband to my wife. And I think I tried to be, but I don't think I was as much as I could have been or should have been at the time. And those are even more reasons why I value my wife even more today, probably than I even did with, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was. So, but the communication was what critical.
Absolutely. The third series of questions we'll call clock management, and how do you spend your time blending family and football? You've obviously moved cross country. You talked a little bit about that. You've moved a lot of different places. When taking a new job, give our listeners one recommendation about moving and one thing you would avoid.
Within the marriage or within just myself as a coach?
It can be the process of moving. We've had coaches talk about how they've implemented, how they've helped their kids acclimate in the moving process, how they've done it. You already mentioned letting your daughter stay at the college and you going ahead, but maybe the process in general of leaving one job, getting to the next, and then getting everybody to you.
When we moved from Wisconsin to Illinois, time we only had two kids, and I left and went down a few months before, and then they ended up coming down, my wife packing up the house, and me starting a new program, but starting my program as the head coach down there. It was tough. It was really tough on, I'll tell you this, it was really tough on our family. And what I found fascinating was that my youngest one acclimated pretty quickly. She was probably two at the time. My older daughter acclimated pretty well what I found out was it was my wife struggling because she was so worried about our kids adjusting. It was the first big move we had had, and we had moved while we were up in Wisconsin, but we stayed right around the area, so it wasn't a huge move. But when we moved down, it was a big, everybody starting new schools. The biggest thing I learned and the biggest thing I would tell you, and this is what some people have told me, and I really, really do believe it. And that is, make sure that your wife and your kids find things to be actively involved in quickly. As soon as you get in there, find a church, get involved with a school district, whatever it may be, find a job, maybe whatever it may be, to get involved in something. You know, that was a struggle for us when we first got down there. My wife and I had decided that she wasn't going to work for a while. She was going to stay with the kids. And we moved to a town where we really just didn't know anybody, knew nobody at all, other than my coaching staff. She kind of knew my coaching staff because I was fortunate enough to hire, especially a good friend of mine, but she didn't really know anybody. So I'd say get actively involved in the community, just to meet some people, make some friends. And because I think anytime you move, it's always tough to make those friends. But if you don't have that social connection, it makes it a little tricky. I think that's the biggest thing. I also think that, you know, once you're there, I think it's incumbent upon the parents, you know, to make sure that you get out and do stuff, get out and see what the new community has to offer. When we moved out here to California, you know, my kids had come out to visit their grandparents. And so they had been out for, you know, maybe a week or so and done some swimming or, you know, kind of did some things here and there. But we really took them and we went down to, we went to Hollywood. We went to down to the beach a number of times. We just went to kind of all the touristy spots, if you will, just to let them see what was out here and just to kind of experience it. We did the same thing when we were in Illinois, where we were living, you know, somewhat close to Springfield or down by St. Louis. We just hop in the car and we'd go. I think the more you can expose your children to what's around them, I think the faster they start to acclimate, whether it's a children's museum or, again, a beach or a lake, or if your family's into fishing or whatever it may be. I think you got to find those places and just go and have fun. I think you really have to be, I think the key is to be very intentional about it, not just say, oh, this came up, hey, let's go do it. It's more that, hey, I'm going to make sure this weekend we're off, we're going to go and do X, Y, and Z because I think it'll be fun. And those are the kind of things I think we've learned as a family. I also think that we've also learned that just as soon as we buy a house and get it fixed up the way we want it, we seem to kind of be ready to move on to the next job. So my wife is a little hesitant sometimes to paint the walls or do some things now because she's afraid we're going to leave again. Yeah. But those are the things I think that as a family that we've done to really help our kids adjust and help, you know, try and help my wife adjust.
Other than weekly dinners, you know, guys will talk about, hey, Thursday nights I go out to dinner with my wife and that's what we do to help our marriage. Is there any other small things that you do during the season to help your marriage continue to grow?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. One of the things I did in 2000 and I think it was 2000, and, was it 2010 or 2011 when I was the head coach? I stopped meeting on Sundays with my staff. I just said, we're no longer meeting on Sundays. If we're not efficient enough to get the work done during the week, then we've got other problems. What that allowed me to do, not to say I didn't work, because obviously, you know, with huddle and, you know, all the game planning that goes on and things you got to do, what it allowed me to do was get my work done early in the morning and then later in the evening after the kids went to bed on Sunday. So I was able to, and then we met with the players on Monday. They still had treatment and some other things, but we met with them on Mondays. But what that allowed me to do, it allowed me to say as a father and as a husband, you know what, it's almost Halloween. I want to go to the pumpkin patch with my kids. I'm going to the pumpkin patch. It may not seem like a big deal, but, you know, for a long time I was left out of all those pictures with my daughter, my wife taking my daughter to the pumpkin patch. Well, now I'm in those pictures. So when my kids look back, when they were 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, whatever they were, they know that dad was with them. And I think that's pretty important. That the fact that I could take the time to do that, the fact that I could also take the time to go to church every Sunday with my family, not to say I didn't go to church, but sometimes when you go to church, you got to race back to the office to get going. Those are the kind of things that make it a little trickier sometimes. And so, but I'll tell you what, that was probably the biggest thing I did as a family, or to help my family, help my marriage, whatever you want to say. I just think it made a huge difference. And I'll be honest with you, I continued that when I got here. The head coach I worked for, he's a great guy and I've known him for a long, long time. I told him, I said, when he hired me, I said, I'm going to tell you right now, I do not work on Sundays. I said, I will this first year because my wife's not here. My wife and kids are not here, but I'm not coming in on Sundays. It's not happening. And he's known me forever. And fortunately, that first year we put up, I think we averaged 51 points a game and 560 yards of offense and crazy numbers or what have you, and won the national title. So he kind of backed off me and didn't force me to come on Sunday. So it all worked out pretty well. But again, he was a good friend of mine. I felt comfortable saying that. So when we looked at this job, that was another factor as we went into it. We knew that was important to us. Now, would that limit me going anywhere else? Absolutely would. And I'm okay with that, knowing that that's the situation for right now and in our lives and where we're as a family, that's where we're at.
You know, I hope to younger coaches listening to this or any coach listening to this, that I just think it's important to understand, right? You can have, you said to me before we got on the call, was just that, you know, chasing a Division I job was never your aim. And you have a really good setup where you are. And sometimes guys get caught on the carousel and, you know, they're chasing what maybe they think they want. And then they get there and they're like, what am I doing here? You know, and you have the luxury of calling that where you don't have to work on Sundays. And there's probably some people listening to this, even at the high school level, thinking to themselves, how do they survive? How do they win? How is that possible? And I think that I'm glad that you brought this to the audience so that they can hear that, you know, you have the chance in certain places or later in your career to kind of set those things. And lo and behold, you won a national championship with your team in that year. So I think it just adds a lot of value to the coaching community when you can hear that you have success and still balance and keep your, you know, family a priority and spending those times together.
Right. I think we as coaches get caught up in doing things the way they've always been done. And I know that when I looked at people that I knew and I trusted, as my dad being a coach and a high school coach, a successful high school coach and a successful junior college coach as well, I know that I looked at some absolutely incredible people who probably spent too much time away from the families, and they love their families. But that's what you do, right? That's what you do as a college football coach. You know, you work 8 days a week and you work 27 hours a day and you outwork everybody, you outgrind everybody. And when I was a head coach, I just asked our coaches, I said, look, let's just be smarter about all this. Now, I'll be honest with you. I watched what Chip Kelly did at Oregon and it kind of challenged my way of thinking and, you know, the status quo way of thinking and say, hey, how can we be more efficient? But how can we be more efficient in a way that's going to benefit us and our families? Because not only did I have a young family, my defensive coordinator at the time had a young family, my offensive line coach at that time had a young family. So how can we do that and spend time with our families? And the thing I've learned is that extra hour in the office is not going to make or break you, but it can hurt your relationship with your kids, with your family, with your wife, with whomever, if you're not nurturing those relationships as well, you know, and that's where I came from. And I really do believe that. And again, I go back to it. If you're spending that much time in the office, are you really being as efficient as you should be?
Guys talk about kids stopping by practice as one way to keep them involved, be around their dad during the season. But are there other things that you have seen from staffs you've been on, you yourself have implemented that get the kids involved in maybe some different ways?
Well, I'll tell you what, I know now where I'm at, my son, he loves to ride the bus. And so the fact that he can ride the bus back to school with us or what have you, you know, that's a fun way. And he's five and he thinks it's the coolest thing ever, especially with the one time where his cousin, who was a year older, 2 years older than him, and they sat in the front row of the bus and they thought it was pretty much the coolest thing ever. Our guys loved it. You know, I think I'll tell you this. And it's not just a matter of your own kids, but I'll tell you what, when your players see you interacting with your own son or your own daughter for that matter, I think that helps in developing those young men as well. And that's kind of a side note, but I think that's absolutely critical. I know training camp, we'd love having, you know, I used to love having my family come to dinner in the dining hall and that kind of stuff, making sure that they were always at everything. In fact, my wife would come by practice all the time and we loved it. I always encouraged our other coaches to have their sons or daughters come to practice as well. And just to be around it. And I always thought it was important again for our guys to see that, that we were fathers first, that we were husbands first before we were coaches. So I'm probably giving kind of the same cliche things that everybody else is saying, but I think those are the things that are pretty critical, is just having them around as best you can, as much as you can. I think that's really what's important.
Are there any things that you do to help manage your phone time when you're at home?
The first thing that I do, yes, the first thing I do is with the iPhone, you can shut it down to put on, I don't know if it's called night mode or sleep mode or whatever it is, but from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m., it does not ring, just doesn't go off. That's the very first thing I do. The second thing I do is I make sure as best I can, I make sure that I am not on the phone when I walk in the door. I make sure that I...
Man, I get in trouble for that almost every day.
Now, that means I sit in the car a lot. I'll be honest with you. I'm sitting out in the car.
Okay.
You know, but I don't walk into the house. And this, you know, and it's going back to communication. It's one of my wife's pet peeves. She doesn't like it when I walk in the house on the phone, which I don't blame her. I don't like it when she does either, if you want to know the truth. But as a coach and as a recruiter, I'm on my phone a lot more than she is.
All right, Coach, there's a common saying amongst coaches that the person with the marker last will win. How do you avoid being too analytical every week and therefore spending unnecessary time preparing for an opponent?
Oh, okay. That's a great one. And you're right. The first thing that we have a rule, I instituted this rule in our offense a long time ago, and I can't remember when. It was probably back in probably 04, 05, somewhere in there, maybe even sooner, maybe even or earlier than that even. But we have our base offensive plays that we run, and we will never run a play off of the base offense. So we've got about, I think there's about, if I remember exactly right, I think it's 12 pass plays and 3 run plays. Okay, and that includes our spur now and screens and stuff. Taking the quarterback out of the equation, because you can pretty much always hopefully count on your quarterback to be smart enough to adjust any of the game plan stuff that you're doing. If we change the assignment for any more than 2 players, we just don't do it. In other words, if we have a play that we run a run and we think is mm-hmm. great against their defense, but if we have to change the assignment for the left tackle, the left guard, and a wideout, we'll say, we don't do it. Not going to happen. We don't put that in. But if we only change the play for the left guard and left tackle, then we'll do it.
Okay.
So if that mm-hmm. does that kind of make sense? Yeah, what that does is it helps us keep in check of ourselves. So we – because what ends up happening as a coordinator, and I've done this many times. I've been fortunate. I've called plays for a long time. But I've also – in doing that, you make a lot of mistakes, right? What I've learned is there's a lot of things you can do, but – sometimes, especially as a young coordinator, you go overboard with all the things you can do instead of sticking to what you should be doing. And my dad used to say all the time to me, hey, great teams have strong tendencies. So don't be afraid to have strong tendencies, because that means you're doing something really, really well. And sometimes we as coaches start getting in and we start tinkering, right? And mm-hmm. that can be a little bit of an issue. So that's one way that we kind of, as I explained to the staff, we start talking about, okay, I like that idea. So what we end up having to do is we end up having to analyze it and say, okay, I like what you're drawing. Because we tell the guys all the time, I tell my staff all the time, bring me every idea you've got. And I'm probably going to say no to 99 out of 100 of them. Mm-hmm. But that one may win us a game. And maybe the 2 or 3 others that you had might win us another game down the road because I remember you talked about it. So it allows us to say, hey, don't be afraid if I tell you no. Because I'm not telling you no, I'm just saying I have to manage the time as the coordinator. I have to manage how much time we have to teach everything within the course of the week. I have to manage who our people are, who our personnel are. Because just drawing it on the board and having that marker is great, but eventually those little circles are real people. And those real people have to go out and make the plays. And so ultimately it's what they know that's really, really critical. So those are the kind of things that I think as a coordinator, it's really incumbent on me to explain to my staff kind of what's going to happen in terms of as we talk through a game plan, as we work through things and what we see and what we're able to do. Now, the one thing I also try and do is I try and, you know, we call it the dirty dozen, is try not to have more than 12 of those wrinkles throughout the game plan. So we don't want to go in there having all these different things. It's more, hey, we got these 12 wrinkles, and one of them might be because of a situational thing. One of them might be because, hey, we've got to adjust because they're an odd front versus an even front, so we got to make this adjustment, whatever it may be. So we try and limit it to about 12 total. But the bottom line is being able to set the parameters when we start off before the season with the coaching staff, so they know that we're never going to stray too far from what it is that we do. And to the point where it's a saying with our players, and every kid I've coached knows it, hey, we do what we do. So that's where having the pin last, I'm okay letting everybody else draw everything else to their heart's desire, all my assistant coaches. Because first of all, that's how you get better as a coach. You constantly come up with new ideas, but you have to test them, and you have to figure out if they're going to work for you or not. But sometimes as a coordinator, I have to be able to say, I like what you did there. It just doesn't fit where we're at right now as an offense. In 3 weeks, it might, but not right now. Or I can say, hey, I love what you just did there. I had an offensive line coach 2 years ago who was a tremendous coach, Andy Felton, who's down at the Blinn College now in Texas. And he would come in and we'd sit and talk, and he'd say, hey, I like this and this and that. And I go, you know, if you change that wheel route to a corner route, it's like the play we already have. And it was really good because he'd come up with ideas, and we were able to work together where what he was seeing, I was able to manipulate to get to what he wanted to do, but within the context of our offense, so we didn't confuse our kids, if that makes sense. So that's kind of some of the things that we do to try and make sure that having the pin last isn't the winner. Having the pin last means that our kids know exactly what they're doing on Saturday.
Absolutely. The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense, hopefully providing some bigger picture things that can prevent a coach from losing what's most important. We talked a little bit about, maybe you'd like to share a little bit about the birth of your son and having some of those struggles. You know, share a struggle you've had to overcome in your career and what lessons other coaches can learn from how you overcame it.
That's a great question. I'll give you one that I think is pretty appropriate. I think, you know, you mentioned my son being in the NICU and my wife being in the NICU 30 miles away. My wife staying at the Ronald McDonald House each night. When I would come over after practice, I'd get there about, you know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it was. He was born during the season, but you know, he's a good coach's kid because he was born on a bye week at least. So we had that going for us.
Well played.
Exactly. But he's in the NICU. And I don't know if anybody is listening that's familiar with NICU nurses, but NICU nurses are angels. They are unbelievable to see what they do with these little itty bitty babies. It is really just something special. But you know, my wife is, you know, staying at the Ronald McDonald House. I'm driving over. I'm spending all night with my son. You know, I drive back at 6 a.m. My wife comes in about 6 to kind of relieve me. My wife and I really don't get a lot of time to see each other, but over that month period or whatever it may have been. But we're having to do our thing. We still have responsibilities. You know, I have responsibility to our team, to our college. And as much as everybody was wonderful and understanding and couldn't have been better, our players' parents were just unbelievable. But at the same time, just being who I am and making sure I wanted to make sure I was not going to drop the ball for them, because those kids were so committed to what they were doing. I was going to make sure that I was going back and forth and doing everything I needed to do. And that was a real struggle. I'll tell you what, though, that was more, I will call it more of a personal struggle. You know, the one nice thing was being a head coach at the college was that a month later, my son had gotten out of the NICU, and about 3 weeks after that, we were able to do a drive at one of our games. Thank goodness Damon Tomeo is the head coach at Knox. Damon's a good friend of mine. We go way, way back. Both Southern California kids were out there in Central Illinois. And, you know, we got his players and his players' parents involved and my players' parents involved. And we did a drive for the Ronald McDonald House of Central Illinois. And they left with literally 3 vans full of just materials that they needed, toilet paper, paper towels, sugar packets. I remember all this stuff. And so professionally, that made me feel really good that I was able to use my position to help someone who literally had just helped me and my family just a few weeks earlier even. I'll say this, professionally, I'll tell you this, the toughest time of my life professionally was when I was the offensive coordinator at Menlo College. I'd been there for 2 years. I had promised the head coach I would stay for two seasons. After the first season, I was offered a full-time job. I turned it down. And my parents thought I was crazy, especially my mom. She thought I was nuts. Why would you turn down a job with benefits and health insurance to stay working as a part-time guy? But I had given my word. And I remember going down, I came back down to Southern California to recruit and just sitting there, and I hadn't, you know, I'd sent out a bunch of resumes trying to get a job, and I couldn't get a sniff. And we just had the number, you know, 7, 8, whatever we were, offense in the nation. We had a ton of points and a ton of yards, and we'd had a good season. And I'm thinking, hey, I got a good shot to probably get a job that's out there. And I couldn't get a call. And it was a pretty lonely time. Long story short, I ended up getting a call right before the national convention from Tim Rucks at Carthage College. And so I ended up meeting with him at the national convention, and they brought me out for an interview about 5 days later. And I accepted the job 3 days after that. And that was an unbelievable. I go from feeling really down and out, like I'm just this, maybe this coaching college thing isn't going to work for me as a full-time coach, to all of a sudden, not only do I have a good job, I got a great job in an area that I enjoy living. And within a couple months, I meet my future wife. And, you know, it's amazing how the Lord works and how you end up going from a situation where you feel really down and lonely and the despair is palpable to all of a sudden within a few weeks or, you know, a month, you have an incredible job with some incredible people. And I think that was probably, as I look back, that was the biggest struggle. And, you know, thankfully I had a guy like Gene Murphy was my college coach, used to be head coach at North Dakota and Cal State Fullerton. And he would give me great advice. And Mark Speckman at Willamette University, who I worked for, would give me some great advice. And, you know, they basically just hang in there. You'll be fine. It'll work out. Just hang in there, hang in there, hang in there. And sure enough, thankfully it did. And, you know, I just can't even begin to think about how kind of down and out I was at the time. And the jobs that I didn't get were probably some of the best things that happened to me, because the jobs that I did get led me to some incredible, incredible people. So there you go. There's my.
Your short answer.
Yeah.
All right. I love it. It's all good knowledge. The audience at home doesn't.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I told you at the beginning, one of the best qualities of my wife is she's a great listener, and that's because I'm a great talker. So there you go.
I love it. When talking about your players, a lot of guys will say to develop a relationship, they have them over for a meal. And that's pretty commonplace. Most people would agree. How do you make your players feel valued outside of their performance on the field?
For me personally, one of the things I really strive to do, I think, first of all, I have my personal set of values that I believe in. There's a few, and our former players of mine know exactly what they are. But one of the things I really do value is developing leaders. And, you know, and I'm a quarterback coach and have been for a long time, but I don't think it's limited to just quarterbacks. I think all of your players can be great leaders. And I think the idea that if you're developing your young men as leaders, they're going to appreciate the relationship as they grow and as they mature. And they may not always appreciate that relationship right then, but they will over time. I think the biggest thing is getting the young men to be consistent, getting them to be positive, getting them to be engaging, getting them to be commanding. Those are the four characteristics that I talk about with our leadership, to make sure that those are the characteristics. When we look at great leaders, those are the characteristics we're looking at and trying to develop that. And I know that's not quite a, you know, I have the quarterbacks over, my wife makes a lasagna dinner for the quarterbacks, and we do all that kind of stuff. And she makes cookies when the quarterbacks get hurt and, you know, are out for a game. At least they get the consolation prize of chocolate chip cookies, homemade chocolate chip cookies or what have you. But I think the best thing you can do for your young men is really just show them how they're growing and how they're maturing. For instance, I had a talk with one of our players just about 3 days ago. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you notice how our relationship between you and me has gotten a lot better? And he said, yeah, I've noticed that. And I said, do you know why that is? And he said, no. He says, because I'm maturing. I said, well, that's part of it. I said, how many weightlifting sessions have you missed? He goes, I haven't missed any, coach. I've been at every single one. I said, yeah. I go, how many did you miss last year? He goes, about half of them. I go, there you go. There's your consistency. I go, now that consistency of you showing up just leads me to trust you, man. I know I can trust you. And whether you make the play or not, I know that I can trust you as a person, because you're going to do everything that you can do to help us win, to help you grow, to help you change, help you do everything, whatever it is, in the classroom, on the field, it doesn't matter, because you're growing and you're changing. But that consistency is what's leading to the trust that we have now. There's a lot of times where I'll send that kind of stuff in a text message to our players at in the evening and just say, hey, I just wanted you to know, I know we haven't talked, you know, a lot of times as a coach, you know, you don't get to talk to every player every day. That's kind of a misconception that non-football people, they think that you get to talk to your players every day. And the truth is, you know, if I'm coaching quarterbacks, I don't talk to the defensive backs, or I may not talk to the receivers all the time. I may not talk to a running back all the time. But I think sending them a quick text and saying, hey, you know, I just want you to know that I see you working. I think you're doing a heck of a job. Or, hey, you know, you seemed a little down today. Are you all right? Just that little text message to let a kid know that you're thinking about him. I probably send 3 or 4 of those a night, just to kids that I haven't personally gotten a chance to kind of come in contact with, because, you know, I'm racing off the field because maybe I've got to teach a night class, or he's got a night class, so he's leaving. But I think those are kind of the little things that really help in the relationship building. I also, one of the things I just did actually, and I love doing this, is writing handwritten notes. You know, one of my favorite people in the whole world, and my dad was actually his defensive coordinator back in the late 60s, is Bill Snyder. And Bill Snyder sends handwritten notes. I mean, he's kind of famous for it. I do the same thing for our guys. I do the same thing. So I've sent my quarterbacks out, and I've sent other players out. I just dropped a whole bunch of them in the mail to all our mid-year transfers. Just, hey, you know, I hope winter workouts went well. I'm just thinking of you, and I just want you to know that I hope you go and you kick some butt this year. You know, it's amazing, that little handwritten note. And you can do it even for your current players. This is one thing that Tim Rux was really good about, just writing a quick little handwritten note to our current players. He would write a handwritten note and just drop it in their locker and say, hey, you know, you've done a heck of a job. I'm really proud of you. It's amazing that, you know, you're already a junior. Whatever he wanted to say. But it's amazing how those little handwritten notes, or even a quick text message at night, it goes a long way for these young guys to really just, you know, because they're in an awkward stage, at least the guys I get, because now they graduate high school, or they kind of get, you know, they got to go somewhere. They can't stay in high school forever, so they got to move on, and we get them in college. And it's our job to help them kind of figure out the world they live in. And the world we live in is a little confusing at times. And that's our job, to help them figure out that who they're surrounding themselves with is pretty, you know, pretty important to their own development, and showing them that the habits they're developing is critical, and just kind of reinforcing them. You also got to call them out when they're, you know, when they're not doing things the right way. But I think you really have to be intentional with the messages you're sending to your players. And that's one thing that I try and do. And again, it's not a meal, although I take guys and we walk across campus, we go to the dining hall and grab a soda and just talk about whatever's going on, because that's partly what we do as coaches. We're counselors as well. But the bottom line is, it's just acknowledging the young men and saying, hey, you know, I see what you're doing. I like what you're doing. I'm proud of you. The other thing is, I think, feel it much more now that I'm back at the junior college level, is making sure that some of my young men understand that they don't need football. They really don't. They grow up in communities where they think they need football to go on and do some other things, but they really don't. I mean, I've got some young men on our team that are just absolutely incredible people. They're extremely intelligent, but they've just grown up in their past thinking they identify solely as a football player. I had a talk yesterday with a young man that we talked about. I go, you know, you don't need football. I go, what do you want to do? And he starts telling me he wants to be a motivational speaker, and he wants to do some other things. I'm like, that's incredible, man. Let's figure out how you can do some of those things. And lo and behold, 10 minutes later, I get an email saying, hey, we need a couple students. Can you help us out, Garrett? Because we need a couple young men is what we need to be on the student panel. You know, so I talked to the young man, called him back in my office, said, hey, do you want to do this? I said, this would be great. If you want to be a public speaker, the only way to get up is you got to start doing it. But I think those little things are absolutely critical to just – helping your guys, letting them understand that you love football, and you should, because I do. I love it. I absolutely love it. But football is not all of who I am. I could walk away from football today, and I would be okay, because I think I know who I am. And I want our guys to understand that too. And I think explaining that to them, especially for some of our young guys that come out of situations where they think football is the only answer to their future lives, and they don't understand how important the education part of it can be as well. And I think that's, I think those are the things that are critical. And again, it's a very long-winded answer to your short question, but I think those are things that, that I just really believe in for our guys.
That's a very powerful answer. And yeah, the length was necessary, and that's good. There's a lot of good things in there that can help a lot of coaches. So we do appreciate it. We're gonna jump ahead to the last question, and I call it victory formation. When the outside world
my favorite formation, I like it.
Yeah, favorite formation in football. When the outside world looks at a coach, they will judge them based on wins and losses or accomplishments of their players. But the potential legacy a coach can have on his players and his family has a much more lasting value than anything that really can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that you couldn't do in any other profession?
Oh, that's very simple. Help develop better men. Helping, and I have to say, it's not just men, because it is, there are some women who I've had in my programs as, you know, managers or other assistants within our programs. But generally speaking, of course, we're talking about the team and made up mostly of going to be all the men that the teams I've been associated with. But making them, allowing them to grow, mature, make their mistakes, but then talking them about how to become better, not perfect. They're not going to be perfect. You're never going to be perfect. But how can you be better? What values do you stand for? What values do you want to believe in your life? Well, I think the idea that if I can help them become a better man, which is going to help them become a better husband, a better father, a better employee, a better, you know, business owner, a better, you name it, whatever it may be, I think then I'm doing my job. And I'll be honest with you, when I was younger, I was all about the X's and O's. You know, I thought I was going to be the next Newt Rockne or whoever. But as I got older and I started to grow as a coach as well, I found out it was just really this, everything I'm doing is all about developing people. So specifically my players, it's about making better men. With my coaches, my assistant coaches, it's about making better coaches. And teaching them how to coach, teaching them how to recruit. But it's just making everybody else around me better. And I think that's what's really critical. I want my players to look back and say, you know what? I hit a rough spot in my life, and he kind of helped me through it. He didn't do a lot, but at least he was there to listen. And I think that's kind of the critical thing. Because if you're able to just listen to what these young people are saying, you can help them, guide them a little bit in terms of making the right choices. And because truthfully, most of the young men that we deal with, if you set a bar to a certain standard, they really want to achieve it. You know, there's some that'll take shortcuts, but most of them really want to achieve it. I think we owe it to them to help them along in that growth and their development. But simply put, it just comes down to helping them become better men.
Awesome, Coach. We really do appreciate your time. Your answers are chock full of wisdom, and we hope a lot of coaches will take even one or two things away to help them benefit their careers, their relationships with their players and their families. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck in the upcoming season.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable. And you can download those and put them into your huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.